Moses, a man of faith in a time of great change for the Israelites. The book of Hebrews lists Moses as one of the great examples of faith that we should look to today. This morning, we will look at the faith of Moses. Moses' faith helped him serve God. It helped him serve his people. And it helped him during a period of great change in the nation of Israel. After 400 years of oppression as slaves in Egypt, the descendants of Jacob had grown into a nation of several million. The children of Israel cried out to God for mercy from their oppressors. God heard their plea. He was about to answer them. God planned to use Moses to deliver them from their bondage. Moses had trusted God to care for his own needs. Now Moses would have to trust God to help him lead his people from Egypt and to prepare them for Canaan. Hebrews 11th chapter, verses 24 through 26, speaks to Moses' faith. By faith, Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to endure ill treatment with the people of God, rather than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin, considering the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking to the reward. Hebrews 11:27 says, "For he endured as seeing him who is unseen." Moses endured. He suffered patiently without yielding. Moses did not yield to the pleasures of sin or the lust of the flesh, the treasures of Egypt or the lust of the eyes, or to being called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, which you might call the pride of life. For 40 years, Moses lived as the son of Pharaoh's daughter. We can well imagine and his life within the Pharaoh's court was one of luxury and privilege. The time had come, however, when one of the biggest decisions of his life had to be made. Should he remain in the royal court and enjoy all the luxuries afforded to him, or cast his lot with the people of God? The poverty and humiliation of his own people was something that he could not ignore. Moses' faith turned his back on the opportunities and riches that could have been his and put his faith and trust in the Lord. Moses saw him who is unseen. Moses could, in effect, see God with certainty because of his faith. The faith of Moses is a faith God desires in us. The beginning of the book of Hebrews defines faith. Now, faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. For by it, men of old gained approval. Someone has said, I don't know where I found this quote anymore, the quote is, faith possesses a strange courage in the face of great dangers because it sees beyond what is visible to the naked eye. Faith is an eye that sees God. Faith believes in the heavenly reward and has inward certainty that is superior to all earthly riches. Moses gave up all worldly riches and honor due to the conviction of things not seen. To have such faith, Moses had to learn to be humble, or another word for that is to be meek. Some of the translations use meek, some use humble. Meekness is defined as, from the Nelson's Bible Dictionary, quote from there, an attitude of humility toward God and gentleness toward men, springing from a recognition that God is in control. Meekness is due to a person's conscious choice. It is strength and courage under control, coupled with kindness, certainly not weakness, as some of the world might see meekness. But as the slide says, as a man in his prime, he saw God granting deliverance through him. And later, as an older man, Numbers 12, verse 3, now the man, Moses, was very humble, more than any man who was on the face of the earth. So when called from God from the burning bush at age 80, it seems Moses no longer thought of himself as delivering his people as he once had when he was in the prime of his life. Questions such as, who am I? And Moses doubted his ability to persuade his own people that God has sent him to deliver them. Moses said, I am not eloquent. God had been preparing Moses for the last 40 years living the life of a shepherd. Moses made a courageous choice 40 years earlier and had now learned patience, self-control, and the ability to care for others. Moses' faith had been tested. The testing of his faith produced endurance, which made him a steadfast rock in a sea of storm when it seems the rest of the Israelites disobeyed, lost hope, looked back, grumbled, worshipped a golden calf, questioned his leadership, questioned his choice by God, and tried to enforce their own will over God's will. Following the miraculous crossing of the Red Sea, we see the feelings and sentiment of the Israelites as they now looked back upon Egypt, not as their master, but as a defeated enemy. Exodus 14:31 says, when Israel saw the great power which the Lord had used against the Egyptians, the people feared the Lord, and they believed in the Lord and his servant Moses. During the last 400 years, the family of Jacob had grown from 70 in number, to a mighty nation of several million. They now expressed their thankfulness and praise to God after crossing the Red Sea. In chapter 15, records a song of praise to Jehovah, sung by Moses and the sons of Israel. And verse 11 of that chapter says, who is like you among the gods, O Lord? Who is like you, majestic in holiness, awesome in praises, working wonders? And I'm not going to read the rest of chapter 15, but I want to make important note of elements of faith that are expressed in this song. So if you read through the rest of the verses in chapter 15, you could take from it that the song acknowledges the strength of Jehovah and his superiority over Pharaoh and his hosts. It acknowledges the power of God over the elements of nature. It acknowledges the power of God over the enemy. It acknowledges the one and true living God in his holiness, and acknowledges the eternal reign of Jehovah. But how strong was their faith? All these sentiments were expressed in the song. So there are five lessons from the wilderness wanderings I want to draw upon this morning. Dependence on God, God's long-suffering has limits. Good young servants can arise despite the failings of their elders. God cares for his people in taming the tongue and maintaining humility. Real dependence on God, real faith and dependence on God is displayed when we are subjected to trials. Just 3 days following the song of praise of Jehovah, they had forgotten the care and provision of God. And then again in the second month after their departure from Egypt, in Exodus 16, verse 3. Exodus 16, verses 1 through 36 is an account of the Israelites complaining they had nothing to eat. The Israelites grumbled against Moses and Aaron and showed regret that they had left Egypt, God was there to provide. They just needed to ask of him. The Israelites were God's chosen people and had seen God's power, yet they doubted. Sometimes do we have a mindset how things should be, and we expect God to do things our way, and when he doesn't do it our way, then perhaps he falls in our minds? Faith is not giving God our expectations and then testing to see if he does it our way. We need to remember that God is in control and knows what is best for us. By being discouraged and grumbling, the Israelites were testing God. God later said to Moses in Numbers 14, verse 11, how long will these people spurn me, and how long will they not believe me, despite all the signs which I have performed in their midst? This is a map showing the location of the wilderness of Paran. The next several slides are pictures which have been taken in this wilderness. It was in the wilderness of Paran that the Israelites spent many years during their wilderness wanderings. As you can see, the wilderness is a very foreboding place. The Israelites had to literally move beyond what their five physical senses could discern and place their complete trust in God to lead and to provide for them. God was near. He would provide when the going got rough. But he first chose to see where Israel would place her trust. Studying Israel, have we in times past too easily written off their behavior as unimaginable? Do we conclude, surely I would have acted differently? Do we consider how we would hold up today during great periods of hardship? Some years ago, traveling through Nebraska, I remember reading a placard detailing the trials of pioneers headed westward over the Plain States. They suffered great psychological strain resulting from many weeks traveling over what seemed to be the same flat ground without a tree in sight. I couldn't help but compare the hard experiences of the pioneers and the children of Israel going on a journey through territory that every day was very foreboding and looked the same every day. Both certainly needed to rely on God. Hopefully we would have been different from the murmurers, but perhaps that's something that we should reflect upon. Another lesson is God's long-suffering has limits. The third month after they had gone out of Egypt, the very day they came into the wilderness of Sinai, God said in Exodus verse 19, verse 4, "You yourselves have seen what I did to the Egyptians, and how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself." The 12 spies had returned with their report of the land, which God said they were to receive. 10 of the spies said the land indeed was as wonderful as God had promised, but their hearts melted when they saw the inhabitants and their military might. They saw what they alone could accomplish themselves, physically themselves, and not what God could accomplish. In their eyes, this was now a dead dream, the spies that gave the bad report. In Numbers 14, verses 1 through 4, "So all the congregation lifted up their voice and cried, and the people wept that night. And all the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron, and the whole congregation said to them, 'If only we had died in the land of Egypt, or if only we had died in this wilderness. Why has the Lord brought us to this land to fall by the sword, that our wives and children shall become victims? Would it not be better for us to return to Egypt?' So they said to one another, 'Let us select a leader and return to Egypt.' But Joshua and Caleb had eyes that saw God. The rest of the Israelites could only see in terms of their own might. God then gave judgment." Surely in Numbers 14, 22 through 23, we see God's judgment. "Surely all the men who have seen my glory and my signs, which I performed in Egypt in the wilderness, yet have put me to the test 10 times, and have not listened to my voice, shall by no means see the land which I swore to their fathers, nor any of those who spurn me shall see it." God has shown that his long-suffering has limits. We are familiar with many scriptures depicting God's long-suffering with nations until their iniquity was made complete. Judgment was then inevitable. Another lesson is that good young servants can arise despite the failings of their elders. At a time when all of Israel was preparing mutiny in choosing another leader to lead them back to Egypt, two lone young voices called out to encourage the people to reconsider what they were about to do. They had just chosen to believe the bad report given by the other 10 spies. Numbers 14, 6 through 9. And Joshua, the son of Nun, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, who were among those who had spied out the land, tore their clothes and said to all the congregation of the people of Israel, "The land which we passed through to spy out is an exceedingly good land. If the Lord delights in us, he will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land that flows with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord, and do not fear the people of the land, for they are bread for us. Their protection is removed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them." Again, as I have said, repeat the quote, faith possesses a strange courage in the face of great dangers because it sees beyond what is visible to the naked eye. Faith is an eye that sees God. God rewarded Caleb for his faith, Numbers 14, verse 24. "But my servant Caleb, because he has had a different spirit, has followed me fully. I will bring into the land which he entered. His descendants shall take possession of it." Truly, each generation decides for itself whom they will serve. Another lesson is that God cares. For 40 years, God dealt graciously with them. He led them through the great and terrible wilderness. He brought water for them out of the rock. He fed them with manna and quail. Their clothing did not wear out. Their feet did not swell. He brought them to a land where they would not lack anything. And by God's might, they would possess the land. God was always there to provide for the Israelites. In Deuteronomy, the 10th chapter, verses 21 through 22, this thought is emphasized. Quote, "He is your praise and he is your God, who has done these great and awesome things for you, which your eyes have seen. Your fathers went down to Egypt, 70 persons in all, and now the Lord your God has made you as numerous as the stars of heaven." When we pray to God, we must not decide how our prayers will be answered. When in bondage in Egypt, the Israelites cried out to God, but could not have imagined how their prayers would be answered. God would prepare them spiritually by humbling them and making them understand that man does not live by bread alone, but man lives by everything that proceeds out of the mouth of the Lord. A whole generation, except for Joshua and Caleb, failed to witness the fulfillment of the land promise in their life. God's ways are for our well-being, even though we may not understand. And another lesson, taming the tongue and maintaining humility. In Exodus 33, verse 9, says, "Whenever Moses entered the tent, the pillar of cloud would descend and stand at the entrance of the tent, and the Lord would speak with Moses. Thus the Lord used to speak to Moses face to face, just as a man speaks to his friend." In the 20th chapter of Numbers, we see the people once again murmuring against Moses and Aaron because there was no water. Moses prays to God for instructions, and God answers. In Numbers 20, verse 8, "Take the rod, you and your brother Aaron, gather the assembly together, speak to the rock before their eyes, and it will yield water. Thus you shall bring water for them out of the rock, give drink to the congregation and their animals." What then follows reminds me of a teaching in the book of James regarding the tongue, the need to be on guard with our tongue, quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger. Moses took the rod as God had commanded and said to the people, "Listen now, you rebels, must we bring water for you out of this rock?" So God had given Moses a simple command to speak to the rock, and Moses disobeyed by striking the rock. Moses also failed to attribute the miracle to God. When we disobey the commands of God, it means that we have a lack of faith in God's word. So, in Moses' life and example, in summary, we want to take a look. We see that Moses had a faith that shows maturity. He understood the attractions of sin were fleeting, understood the reproach of Christ was greater than the treasures of Egypt. Moses had a faith that chooses the right, chose to endure ill treatment with the people of God. Moses had a faith that leads to action, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, and by faith he left Egypt. Moses had a faith that suffers hardship. What patience Moses must have had. The people complained to him, But by doing this, they were grumbling and complaining to God. And Moses had a faith that leads to triumph. Moses led the Israelites through a period of time of great change. While all the Israelites, save for Joshua and Caleb, doubted, were confused, and disobedient, Moses had the faith that saw beyond what is visible to the naked eye and saw God. He is the great example that safely guided them through this time of change and brought them to the edge of their new homeland, the land promised by God to Abraham. Paul, in the first letter to the Corinthians, recounts the sins of the Israelites in the wilderness as an example and instruction what we as Christians must work to avoid. 1 Corinthians ten, verses 6 through 13. Now these things took place as examples for us, that we might not desire evil as they did. Do not be idolaters as some of them were. As it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. We must not indulge in sexual immorality as some of them did, and 23,000 fell in a single day. We must not put Christ to the test as some of them did and were destroyed by serpents, nor grumble as some of them did and were destroyed by the destroyer. Now these things happened to them as an example, but they were written down for our instruction, on whom the end of the ages has come. Therefore let anyone who thinks that he stands take heed lest he falls. No temptation is overtaking you that is not common to man. God is faithful, and he will not let you be tempted beyond your ability, but with temptation he will also provide the way of escape that you may be able to endure it. In the midst of change, we must make the right decisions. Every generation faces its own challenges and the direction it will take. That's it. Heraclitus, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it right, he was a Greek philosopher, and he made a quote that I think a lot of us are familiar with. The quote is that change is the only constant in life. And it is in Ecclesiastes, the third chapter, starting verse 3, it says that change is always around us, where it starts out by saying, for everything there is a season and a time for every matter under heaven. It starts out to say a time to be born and a time to die, and goes on with the different types of things that we face in going through life. We face pleasant things. We face things that are very hard, hardships to face. So some things are pleasant in life. Others are the kind that we do not want to face, but life gives us no choices. So we have looked at lessons in the wilderness. Now let's take a look at the crossing of the Red Sea and at Moses' faith displayed there. In Exodus 14, the Israelites found themselves in dire straits and a difficult situation, as if the walls were closing in on them. In Exodus 14, verse 1, reads, when Pharaoh drew near, the people of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians were marching after them, and they feared greatly. And the people of Israel cried out to the Lord. So let's take a look at what led up to this situation. In Exodus 14, verses 2 through 4, we see there what happened previously was the Lord said to Moses, tell the people of Israel to turn back. They have left Egypt. They were on their way out of Egypt. And here it says, tell the people of Israel to turn back and encamp in front of Pi-Hiroth between Migdol and the sea in front of Baal Zephon, and you shall camp facing it by the sea. For Pharaoh will say of the people of Israel, they are wandering in the land, and the wilderness has shut them in. And I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and he will pursue them. And I will get glory over Pharaoh and all his host. And the Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord, and they did so. So God had placed his people in a no-win situation when you consider only human terms. Their back was literally up against the sea. This was a situation where only God could deliver them out of Pharaoh's army. So the people are placed in this situation. Pharaoh and his army are rushing towards them. To the back is the sea. So what were the reactions of the people? They said to Moses in verse 11, Is it because there are no graves in Egypt that you've taken us away to die in this wilderness? What have you done to us in bringing us out of Egypt? Is it not what we said to you in Egypt? Leave us alone that we may serve the Egyptians. For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in this wilderness. So when we talk about change, and we talk about all the changes that Moses had to face during the exodus out of Egypt and the wilderness wanderings, the changes he faced now. So Moses finds himself with this incredible army coming against him. He finds himself with his own people in mutiny. And he finds himself in a geographical location that has him hemmed in. There is absolutely nowhere to go. God had, and up to this point, from as I read, God had not given him any direction at this point what comes next. God said he would deliver them, but he did not really say exactly what was to happen at this point. So Moses' reaction. So Moses said to the people, "Fear not, stand firm, and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will work for you today. For the Egyptians whom you see today, you shall never see again. The Lord will fight for you, and you have only to be silent." So in Exodus 14, verses 15 through 18, God then tells Moses how to proceed. Exodus 14, verses 15 through 18. "The Lord said to Moses, 'Why do you cry to me? Tell the people of Israel to go forward. Lift up your staff and stretch out your hand over the sea and divide it, that the people of Israel may go through the sea on dry ground. And I will harden the hearts of the Egyptians so that they shall go in after them. And I will get glory over Pharaoh and his host and his chariots and his horsemen. And the Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord when I have gotten glory over Pharaoh, his chariots, and his horsemen.'" So Moses proceeded to do as God told him. He raised his staff, the waters parted, Israelites crossed the Red Sea on dry ground, the waters returned and fell on the Egyptian army, causing them to perish. So we see in that instance, we see Moses' faith, great faith once again. Faith possesses a strange courage in the face of great dangers because it sees beyond what is visible to the naked eye. Faith is an eye that sees God. God delivered the Israelites from the bondage of slavery and promised a land flowing with milk and honey. Today God offers deliverance from sin. We are not unlike the Israelites in that we too are journeying toward a promised land, heaven. We too must deal with the stumbling blocks of the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life as they did. We looked at the kind of choices Moses made in his life. He chose what was right. Will we choose what is right? Will we choose God over the riches of this world? Will we give God our time? Peter, in his sermon in chapter 4 of Acts, tells us Moses spoke regarding the coming of Christ. In Acts 4:22, it says, "Moses said, 'The Lord God will raise up for you a prophet like me from your brethren. To him you shall give heed to everything he says to you.'" Today, are you ready to give heed to that prophet? That prophet being the Son of God, Jesus Christ, to what he says? Have you responded to the invitation of Christ by believing, repenting, confessing Christ as Lord, and putting on Christ by being baptized in the likeness of his death? If you haven't responded, we invite you to come forward to take advantage of that opportunity now. Or if there are those desiring the prayers of the congregation, please come forward as we stand and sing.